Verification Corner!
Hello, I'm Rustin Leno. Welcome to Verification Corner. We're going to talk about termination today. Termination of loops and termination of functions. Let me draw a prototypical loop on the board. Here's a simple while loop. The while loop is going to iterate as long as some condition B holds. And then each iteration it will do some statement S. How do we make sure that this loop terminates? Well, we associate with it a function which is called a variant function or a bound function or a termination metric or a rank function. And this function, which is just going to evaluate to some value, at the beginning of the loop, we think right here, just before the evaluation of the guard, that is at the very top of the loop, we're going to evaluate it to some value. And here, just before we're about to return to the top of the loop again, we once again evaluate what the value is. And we want to make sure that the variant function, the bound function, is going to strictly decrease between these two points. If we can do that, we're on our way to proving termination. But there are two more things that we need to think about. Let me erase and show you an example. Suppose that our loop body does something as simple as it decreases some variable n. In this case, we could use n as that variant function because it decreases, which is good. It strictly decreases every iteration. But it's not certain that this loop would terminate. For example, the loop guard here might be do this as long as n is not zero, but it might be that n starts off as negative. In that case, this loop will never terminate. So the important thing is here that we also need to have a lower bound for the decrement. So the lower bound in this example could be zero, which would be fine if n starts off being non-negative, then we can prove that this terminates. Okay, so we need to make sure that it decreases, we need to make sure that it's bounded from below, but there's one more thing that we need to worry about. Let me erase again. Suppose that we admit real numbers into our programming language, just for the sake of demonstration. So suppose that x is such a real number, and each time through the body of the loop, I will change x to be half of what it was previously. In this case, if x starts off being non-negative, we have again we strictly decrease it each time through loop, and it is bounded below from zero. Yet this loop will not terminate. And the reason is that every iteration through the decrement of x gets smaller and smaller. So we will never reach zero, which is required for this loop to terminate. So in order to make sure that we don't take smaller and smaller steps down each time through the loop, what we need to make sure is that the type of x is such that the steps will keep some minimum size. You can define that quite mathematically, usually having to do with some epsilon that has to be the some lower bound on the decrements. But really, in practice, the type of the variable is going to take care of this problem for us. So let's go to the computer and let's look at some examples there. All right, here we are at the computer. Let me show you that simple loop that we started off with on the whiteboard in a slightly modified way. This is Visual Studio, and I'm using our research language, Daphne, because Daphne has the termination functions that I want to show you. All right, and it's a C-sharp-like language, so it looks object-oriented here. Okay, so let's start off with a simple loop. So what the simple loop will do is just iterate up to n for some given n. Okay, so in this loop, what is going to be the bound function, the variant function? Well, it's going to be something that decreases. And in this case, I wrote the I as something that increases. So we're going to have to, we could not use just I as the variant function, but instead we'd have to use minus I, for example. So here you can see if I hover with the mouse over the while statement that we're getting the complaint that the decreases expression, which is our variant function, does not decrease. Well, that's because I have not even given one yet. So let me declare decreases. And again, we cannot use I, but we could use minus I, because minus I is something that does decrease. But then remember, a decreases expression, a variant function, must be something that is bounded by zero, or bounded below. So it turns out that Daphne always uses zero as that lower bound. So in this case, minus I could be quite negative, but the but if we start off, if we take the decreases function to be n minus I, that is something that will always be non-negative. So here we are. That proves the termination of this loop. Okay, that was simple. Let's try something a little bit different. Let's try a function, and I'll give you a simple function which is often used, which is the Fibonacci function. So the Fibonacci function, as you're familiar with, computes just itself for the first two numbers, 0 and 1, and otherwise it's the sum of the previous two numbers generated. So in this little Daphne function, I've shown the definition of Fibonacci. The complaint that we're getting is a failure to decrease the termination measure, which happens for a loop. It happens at the end of the loop iteration, but for functions that we're trying to prove to terminate, it happens at the time of the recursive call. So again, we have not associated a termination metric with this function, so let's do that. And in this case, the thing that decreases with every call is the parameter n. So all we need in this case is just decreases n. Then when we get to the recursive calls, here we're passing in n minus 2, here we're passing in n minus 1. So now, what happened with the boundedness, that it bounded from below? Well, Daphne knows that these two function calls, the recursive ones, happen only if n is at least 2. So therefore, at the time of the recursive calls, everything is still fine. The things are bounded. Okay, that's that little example. Let me show you another one. Another mathematical function, since we're into those. So here's the famous Ackermann function. The Ackermann function is more complicated, and we don't need to know much about it in this example other than staring at its definition. What you can see is that it takes two parameters, m and n, both integers, and it makes some recursive calls. So in the first of the three branches, there's no recursion at all. But in the other two cases, there's either one recursive call or two recursive calls. So what are we going to associate as the termination metric here? Well, I write the decreases function. And we might try one of the parameters, which would seem pretty good, maybe. Well, what we can see now is that the verifier tells us that the first call was just fine. The first call does decrease m at the time of the recursive call, and so does the one of the other two calls. But this call leaves m the same, so that's not a good termination function that we have chosen. Well, we can see for this one that it decreases n. So let's try that as the termination function. So let me change the termination metric here, the decreases function, to n instead of m. Well, now we're fine for the third of the recursive calls, but not for the other two. For example, this one always passes in 1 for n, whereas n started off with something that was non-positive. So that doesn't work either. So what are we going to do? Well, the Ackermann function needs a slightly more complicated termination metric. It needs a lexicographic pair. So a lexicographic pair is like sorting names alphabetically in the phone book. So I'm going to give a list of functions. In this case, I'll give it m followed by n. So the m comma n function is the lexicographic pair which decreases if either m decreases. In that case, it doesn't matter what n does. It can go up or down. Or it's also okay if m stays the same as long as n decreases. In those cases, the function will strictly decrease. And in fact, in this case, the verifier has already verified for us that is a good termination metric. In this case, we can see that m goes down. Here also m goes down. In this case, m stays the same, but n goes down. And therefore, the whole thing terminates. Okay, that was the Ackermann function. Let me show you one more example. In this last example, it's going to be a little bit hairier. We're going to have to do more things in order to prove termination. But we're all up for the challenge. So here is the here's a simple linked list implementation. And it's simple because it's missing some of the functions you would expect. But let me show you what I have here. So I'm using a class list. It has two data members. It has a data field, which stores an integer, and it has a next field, which points to the rest of the list. And my intention here is that all of the lists are represented as acyclic lists. The singleton method takes one in parameter, and it creates and returns a list as an out parameter. And the out parameter is just going to have that given x as its data member. So no surprise in its body here. The prepend function takes both an element and a given list, and it, what it will do is it will extend that list at the head of the list, and it will return the result. And again, no surprise, it allocates a new linked list node, sets the data field, sets the next field to the given tail, and everything is cool. All right. So now let's write a sum function that is going to sum up the elements of the linked list. So I have the function prototype down here. And we're going to have to look at the next field. So I will check here. If next is null, then the thing we're going to return is just data, because then the sum of all of the elements is just of that the data element for that node itself. Else, it's going to be data plus the sum of the rest of the list. So we do that by invoking the sum function on the next of the list. Now, you're noticing here that it's complaining about a reads clause. I don't care about reads clauses in this example. I don't want to demonstrate them. So let me just say reads star, come back to a different verification quarter, and I will talk more about those. Okay, but what you will notice here is that we do have a recursive call. That is, we call the sum function, which we're defining here, we're calling that on the next field. So why does that terminate? Well, it terminates because the list is acyclic. If the list is acyclic, there are only so many next steps you can do, and eventually you will get down to the base case, which will just return data, and the recursion terminates. But how are we going to convince the verifier of this fact? Well, that will take a little bit of work. So what we're going to do is we're going to store in each linked list node the set of all linked list nodes that that comprise the whole list. I will do that by going back here to the top, and I will introduce a variable for that purpose, and it's going to be a ghost variable, which means that it's a variable that's used only in the specification of the program. We don't need to actually compile this function, compile this data member in the running program. It's only here for the specification. Okay, so what is it going to be? So let me call it the tail nodes. Or I can call it list nodes, maybe that's a better name. List nodes, and that's going to be a set of list items here. Okay, so with this, I can now store into the list nodes of an object the set of all nodes that make up the list. But I need to say something about that as well. I need to at some point explain to the verifier which things I'm going to put into the set. So for that purpose, let me write another function. And the function is going to be called isAcyclic. It will return a Boolean. And again, I don't care about the reads clauses in this demo, so I'll just make that reads star. And now we need to say what it means for a node to be acyclic. Well, one thing is that we want the list nodes field to be accurately represented. So we're going to say that the object itself is indeed part of list nodes. Otherwise, this object is not even well formed, and we don't really care to say much about it. But we want to say a little bit more, and that is that if the next field of the object is not null, then a number of things have to happen. We're going to say, first of all, that the next field, which also has a list nodes, its list nodes is a subset of the list nodes of the current object. And we're going to say, furthermore, that the object itself is not part of the list nodes of the next guy. And that's important. It's just exactly this conjunct, which is going to tell us that the list is acyclic. But we need one more thing, which is that we need to make a recursive call to the to make sure that the rest of the list is acyclic. We don't want a lasso at the end of the list here. So I will use the same function again. So here is our definition of acyclic. But now, acyclic is also a function, and Daphne is going to check that all functions are well defined, which means that they're not allowed to loop forever. And at this point, we see a failure to decrease the termination measure. So in fact, the is acyclic function also needs a termination measure associated with it. So let's do that. And the termination measure is going to be that it's going to decrease the set of list nodes of the object on which we're invoking it. And that takes care of the termination of is acyclic. You can see to begin with, it's the decreases function evaluates to list nodes of the current object. And here when we invoke it on next, it's going to be the list nodes of the next object, which by these two conjuncts we've said is a strict subset. Okay, so now we can decorate our other functions a little bit, our other methods, with the is acyclic predicate, just because we have it. So what we're going to ensure for the singleton is that the list that is returned is indeed acyclic. And for the prepend function, we're going to insist that either tail is null or the tail is acyclic. And in the end, we can guarantee that the list that we return is acyclic. Okay, so let's see what happens with those. Now we get the number of complaints. One complaint is here that the post condition of singleton might not hold. The reason for this is that we need to make sure that the list really is acyclic, but being acyclic says something about the list nodes field, and we have not set list nodes to anything. List nodes is just a ghost field, so it works as any other field. The only difference is that it's not part of a compiled program. So what we need to do is we need to set the list nodes set the field here to some value. And in this case, it's going to be the singleton consisting of the list itself. Okay, let's see if that warning goes away, and it does. Okay, good. Here's the next problem. Prepend also needs to have something done with the list nodes. And that's a little bit more complicated, but we can do it. It's going to be here, we're going to look at if tail is null, then it's simply going to be the singleton list. Else it's going to be the singleton list union the list nodes of the tail. Let me scroll down a little bit here. And we should see... semicolon. Okay, we see that go away. And now we're finally back. So what we've done right now is we added the list nodes ghost field, and we added the is acyclic function, and we instrumented the methods to with their specifications to talk about the acyclicity of these lists. So now we're back to the sum function, which was our original goal to try to specify that sum indeed terminates. And now we can finally do it. We need to do two things. One thing is we need to say that it decreases the list nodes, which is just the same as we had to do for the acyclic. But we need to do one more thing, which is that, and we should see it here soon. The problem is also that we need to make sure that the sum is only applied on acyclic lists, because we would not actually be decreasing list nodes if it were on a cyclic list. So we require of this function that you can apply it only on acyclic lists, and then all is good. So with that, we have proved that the sum function terminates. And again, that was a lot more work because we had to go and specify the acyclicity of the lists and so forth. But those are things that you probably would have done to prove the correctness of the program in other regards. So the adding the termination to it comes down to just adding the decreases line once we have the other things defined. All right, let's summarize what we've learned. To prove that the loop terminates, introduce a termination metric associated with the loop, and make sure that the termination metric has three properties. The first property is that the termination metric strictly decreases with each iteration. The second property is that it's bounded from below. The third property is that it, when it decreases, it doesn't decrease in smaller and smaller steps, but instead the decreasing stays above some decreasing threshold. The last of those is typically ensured by just the type of the expression. And do the same thing for recursive functions, just introduce a termination metric for those as well. This has been Verification Corner. I'm Rustin Leino. Program safely. Verification Corner.